I'm Chris Preston.
And I'm Brad Zimmerman.
And welcome to Street Check, the best two-person podcast in the history of Cabot Wealth Network. Brad, you got in my head last week talking about some of the one-person podcasts we have. I think Tom Hutchinson has one in addition
to does.
Bruce Kizer when he was here had one, and I think now Matt Warder, who was taking his place, now has one as well. So two-person podcast, we'll go with that, so it's not to offend. Lots going on in the market, lots to get to today, Brad, but first I'd be remiss if I didn't pour one out for your beloved maybe Coyotes. First of all, I didn't know, as I've said on this podcast before, I had forgotten the Coyotes were still an NHL team in Phoenix. Are they the Arizona Coyotes or Phoenix?
I think they've stayed Phoenix. Anytime I've been an active rooter for them, they've been the Phoenix Coyotes. We just call them the Yotes.
Okay. Anyway, they just played, I believe, their last game ever as the Yotes and are moving to Salt Lake City. I don't know if they'll still be the Yotes. I don't know how many Coyotes are in Salt Lake City. What was your greatest Coyotes memory?
Keith Tkachuk in the 90s. When I was a kid, the Coyotes had a solid team.
They were there in the 90s? I have zero memory of that.
It's like 92, 94, somewhere around there. I don't know. That was 30 years ago. But no, I went to a Kings playoff game with my brother in, I think, the 2011 season. That's the last Coyotes game I've been to, but that was a lot of fun. They've had some good squads periodically, but ice hockey doesn't really work in the desert, we learned after a long, long time.
30 plus years, though. That's a good run. I mean,
I'd look at this. This is not going to be the most.
Would have been jealous of that.
This won't be the most important thing I'm wrong about today, but I think that's about right. But yeah, they had an arena in Glendale that they played in for a long time. That lease ended, and then they started playing in ASU's hockey stadium, which only seats like 5,000 people. I was looking at tickets there for their last home game. They went from $300 a piece to $900 a piece. Yeah. So needless to say, I didn't go. I'm not that big of a hockey fan, but I like hockey. If the team's worth rooting for, I'm sort of a fair weather fan that way. But it's different. I never played ice hockey. I can barely ice skate.
I doubt anyone who grew up in Arizona has played ice hockey.
I had a buddy that played roller hockey, and the Arizona roller hockey team was the Roadrunners are actually sort of a local favorite, but ice hockey never gained traction. Teams were good a couple of times, but I'll miss them. It was nice having them here. And I do know that the owner is, as part of the contract to sell, has the right, if he gets a land lease, has the right, if they add an expansion team, of first refusal. So who knows? They might be back in the next 5 years. But I don't think everybody's clamoring for it.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it. Okay. So moving on, just like the Coyotes, let's move on to the market. What do we got? What are we talking about today?
So this week we'll talk about the market pullback. It is real and spectacular, and I'll allow you to elaborate on that. Talking about earnings season starting, are they moving the needle? And then we're going to discuss whether the party is over for Bitcoin. I have some thoughts on that. I take it that you do as well.
I do. But first, as always, we'll start with our Defend the Take. You're up this week, Brad. And your take this week, just send shockwaves through. This is going to be clickbait. ASML is the most influential earnings report this earnings season. You have 90 seconds. Explain.
All right. So ASML manufactures equipment for chip makers. Their clients include Taiwan Semi. All the big boys use ASML equipment. Their net bookings fell from $9.2 billion to $3.6 billion. So it's a two-thirds decline in net bookings, which means their buyers are not buying high-end chip manufacturing equipment. They specifically cited the high-end manufacturing equipment. A lot of their order book, 49%, came from China, and China cannot manufacture the high-quality chips yet, at least. Where it's a concern for me and why I wanted to bring it up, which is less relevant now that the market's up, like Dow's up 300 points today, something like that, definitely having a rally, is that ASML should be viewed as sort of a canary in the coal mine. Semiconductors are historically very cyclical. So if you've got a decline in manufacturing product orders, then that can sort of portend a decline in chip sales. Now, the flip side of that is it is possible that CapEx, capital expansion limitations for the chip makers, is throttling demand for the manufacturing equipment. But the other side of that coin is we might actually be seeing a sort of cyclical slowdown in semiconductor sales, which would be bad news for NVIDIA, bad news for the companies that have been leading the market rally higher, bad news for the AI narrative. We'll see in the coming quarters, but I think that's a safe one to look at as a like I said, canary in the coal mine.
All right. You hit the post. Perfectly done.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, I like your canary in the coal mine take. I mean, I'll be honest. I don't know much about or spend a whole lot of time thinking about ASML, but I like the potential butterfly effect that you're talking about with earnings being down, and it could mean bad news for, you know, bigger headline companies like NVIDIA. Hopefully not. But you know, we've talked about an AI sort of hitting the pause button, at least the AI fervor sort of hitting the pause button for a while. And it seems that's happening. I mean, I think that started to happen before the market pulled back, which is probably part of why the market pulled back. I think AI has been sort of in a bit of a holding pattern or consolidation or, minor pullback, however you want to term it, for probably close to a month. Whereas, you know, the market, which we'll talk about, it's really been an April thing where it's pulled back. But maybe reality of AI sort of being out over its skis. This is the first sign of that reality, first tangible sign of that reality.
Yeah, and we saw it with NVIDIA as well. They dropped, I think, 3.5% after ASML reported. Taiwan Semi was off a little bit at the open. I don't know where they're at right now. So it's something to pay attention to, certainly. But, I mean, we're talking about companies that have, you know, added 50%, 100% to their market caps in like 5 months. So any kind of pullback can be extreme, even if it's not in response to changes in the underlying business.
Right.
And, you know, as I said, the sort of flip side of the coin is maybe we're just seeing throttled expansion because it takes a long time and a lot of effort to build a chip fab or to build a manufacturing facility. I mean, Taiwan Semi's been building stuff in Arizona for years and that's not operational yet. It could be just a short-term response. I know ASML actually didn't change their guidance for the full year. They think the second quarter is going to be strong and 2025 is going to be even stronger. So it could just be a temporary blip and nothing to worry about, but it is something that I'm paying attention to.
Okay. Let's move on to the market. I've sort of phrased this as, you know, the market pullback, which, you know, S&P is down more than 4% this month now. 4% end of March was the highs, all-time highs. I think it's a good thing. I cited last week that, you know, even in 2020, 2021, which felt maybe less so in the moment, but certainly in retrospect feels like, you know, the glory days where the stocks went nowhere but up for basically 21 months after the March 2020 COVID crash. But that wasn't the case. There were five pullbacks of at least 3%, two of which were more than 5%. One was close to 7%. This is the first one we've seen since this rally really began at the start of November or late October. It was five straight up months, totally unchallenged. Only the 30th time that's ever happened in the S&P, or since 1950 that's happened in the S&P. So market pullbacks are healthy. Do I think this is the end of the bull market? No, I don't. Which is why I think this is a good thing. This is a chance to get in at better prices, trim some laggards from your portfolio and hang on to what's really working. And then, you know, maybe double down or at least add to those positions after this selling subsides. I don't think it's over. I think we could, you know, I just mentioned it's like 4.2% now. I bet we do get below 5% or more than 5% pullback. Do I think it's going to get to 10%? No, but we'll see. What's your take?
I said a couple of weeks ago that I thought we were going to see some sort of correction. I think that's largely played out. And technically, I think it's played out about as I would have expected. On the technical front, S&P broke its 50-day line. But we've sort of gotten close enough to army work to backfilling that, or close enough for army work to backfilling that February gap. S&P found support at the 5,000 level twice. So right now, in the short term, at least, the market is poised for a bounce back. Whether this is just a bounce or whether it's a reversal, I'm looking for the S&P over 5,100. That's sort of my confirmation line. And, you know, maybe it bounces back and then trades lower. We saw that if you look back to on the charts, July and August of last year is the last time it broke below the 50-day line, broke below it, bounced around a little bit, traded back up to it, got rejected, and then closed above it, but then went on to sell down another like 10%. Mm-hmm. If that happens, you know, I'm probably looking at like the 4,800 levels, so back where we were at the start of the year. But for the time being, it's promising. And the big thing behind that is not specifically from the technical picture, but the way that we saw selling in the course of the last week. If you've been watching the markets daily, you've noticed probably that it's gapping up at the, or it's opening higher, it's gapping up at the open, and then it's sort of stair-stepping down throughout the day. And then early in the rally, what we would get is we would get reversals at the end of day where you would have buying pressure right at the close. And that disappeared. So we haven't seen that for the at all this week. It's actually turned into selling pressure at the close. It's premature. Today, we're not seeing that same kind of activity. So we're not seeing the stair-step activity that is commensurate with somebody doing what I would consider to be like an ordered unwind, right? If you have a really, really big position, let's say you've got a million shares of XYZ stock, you can't just dump it on the market because you crashed the price. Yep. What you do is you parcel it out and you sell it throughout the day. It's the same thing we tell people when they buy illiquid stocks, or like Tyler talks about with some small cap stocks. That selling pressure isn't there right now. So I think at the very least, we're going to get a relief rally, and whether that's a resumption of the bull market, I don't know. But I closed my shorts. I'm feeling kind of optimistic right now after we double tapped the 5,000 line on the S&P where we got close to it. So I'm more in the bull camp, and I think, like you said, it's probably a better time now, certainly, than it was last week or even earlier this week.
Yeah. Well, for you to be bullish, then we must be selling must have been enough.
Long term, I'm still sort of wait and see. Short term, way more bullish.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I could see it breaking below 5,000, maybe even getting to, as you mentioned, you know, it started the year, S&P started the year, calendar year, right in the mid 4,700 to, you know, very quickly it got above 4,800 in like the first 10 days of the month. I could see it pulling back there because, you know, when this rally started, end of October, the bottom was October 7th, 4,117. So the market sort of did a lot of its work in November and December. So pulling back to where it was at the end of December wouldn't be totally shocking. I'd be surprised if it pulls back more than that. You never know. I mean, I guess what is the thing that could turn it around other than it's still a bull market, and, you know, at a certain point, people will say, okay, the big institutions will say we've unwound, you know, we've gotten rid of some of our laggards and now we're ready to buy back in. The Fed is the big thing that's still looming out there. We'll get into that in a second, but I guess what could spark the turnaround? You know, maybe it doesn't even require one in a bull market. I think the selling will continue at least for another, you know, week or two. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, I wouldn't be totally stunned. I mean, this could be just a little bit of a relief bounce. You know, sellers could be sort of reloading right now. It's certainly possible. I think the technical picture is improved. The big thing for me with most of the rally starting in January, it didn't have a ton of volume behind it. You had a lot of divergences in the relative strength and on balance volume indices that that typically shows a rally without a ton of conviction. So us undercutting some of that rally, us meaning the broader markets, is not a huge surprise. If you start seeing high volume accumulation, basically, if I wanted like one catalyst, it would be somebody to come out and affirm the bull narrative. Maybe it's like Nvidia reports positive earnings or blowout earnings. Netflix, I think they report tomorrow or maybe today after the close. I don't remember. Somebody that comes out with a really, really impressive earnings report could maybe drive some more speculative buying, just something that that confirms the narrative. I wish I had something on my radar that I could specifically point to.
Yep.
But I'm looking more for structural improvements in buying activity, starting to see more stuff hit new highs. Oh, you know what? I'll tell you what. If we start seeing the small caps outperform again.
Yeah.
That, you know, we had the broadening rally and then that pulled back and was narrowing. And then we had our leaders pull in. If we see leaders stabilize and the rally sort of broadens out to smaller caps, that's probably that's definitely a bullish sign, but that strikes me as one thing to look for.
Yeah. You know, I may have to dust off the old buy in May. Rather than selling May, go away, take from a year ago. We had just started a year ago, this podcast. We were like newborn babies. Actually, did you know this is officially, pretty much semi-officially, our 1 year anniversary of launching this podcast. You know that? April 14th last year was the first one. So
did not know that.
Close. Yeah, I realized it in the last 90 seconds.
Only been a year. It feels much longer.
It does feel much longer, but we made it a year. So buy in May, I think. I think another couple of weeks, April's going to end up pretty ugly, but after five straight months of buying, I don't think that should be a surprise to anyone. I think it's an opportunity. I think it's a good thing. I think it's healthy. Moving on to sort of potential catalysts for the market down the road. Earnings season's underway. The banks reported last Friday, and a few more big companies, you just mentioned Netflix, are reporting this week, starting to get into full swing. How much does this earnings season matter? I mean, we're back to a Fed and inflation dominated market, for better or worse right now. And then, you know, there's the Iran, Israel thing, the geopolitical risk is ramped up. It's a presidential election upcoming. There's a lot going on right now. So how much in the grand scheme of things, in terms of as a market catalyst, does this earnings season matter, do you think?
I'm going to piggyback a little bit on like this structural selling that I was talking about, and the unwinding and profit taking. I do think that big investors are sort of recalibrating what their expectations are, right? We've seen the Fed rate cuts get pushed out and out and out and out. We saw Treasury yield start picking back up again. So I think that maybe we're seeing some profit taking and a recalibration. And what I would consider that is an outgoing tide, not in the Warren Buffett sense of like when the tide goes out, you see who's swimming naked, right? It's not like end of the world tide. It's just we're seeing expectations get re-rated for what earnings could or maybe should deliver. If you've got the tide going out and you have some particularly strong swimmers, they can beat the tide. They can sort of outswim it. We saw that like some of the airlines have been performing really well lately. eBay reported earlier yesterday or today and picked up a little bit. So you're going to see these pockets of strength as the market recalibrates a little bit. which I think does make it more of a stock picker's market. There was an interesting take that I saw in the Wall Street Journal. I don't remember the author, which is my great crime on this podcast. An interesting pitch that it sort of refutes the bubble idea, because individual investors and institutional investors are paying attention to individual company performance. It's not that level of exuberance that we saw in, you know, the dot-com bubble, or in historically that we see in bubbles. So people are still paying attention to earnings. I think they matter a lot on a company specific basis. But with sort of an outgoing tide, you're really going to need to impress to pop. I mean, we saw USB and Citizens just reported, JP Morgan reported as well, and all of them showing weakening net interest income. So it's sort of, you've got sort of rough conditions for the banks, but if somebody comes out and really beats expectations, maybe they outperform.
Yeah. So pulling up the stats for overall expectations this earnings season. For the S&P, 3.4% growth is what's expected. It'd be a third straight quarter of growth. The last two have exceeded expectations. It's been grown faster than estimates. I could see this one either falling short or being right around what's expected. I think what would make this earnings season really matter is if somehow earnings growth came in, if it didn't grow, if it came in negative or even barely positive. I think then that could really extend the sell-off. But, you know, I don't know how much that, if we exceed that 3.4% level, I don't know how much that would move the needle in the other direction. I guess it depends on which companies, beat estimates.
Yeah, the market, for at least as measured by the price to earnings on the S&P, is sort of priced for perfection, right? Rate cuts, strong economy, strong employment, all that stuff sort of has to go right for companies to really beat. So if we're in a period where we're no longer pricing it for perfection and we start pricing it for reality, then yeah, I think there's a lot more room for disappointment than there is for upside surprise, but that could contribute to the upside surprisers benefiting disproportionately. I mean, we'll see. It's still early in earnings season. We might be singing a totally different tune by the time May rolls in. Netflix will be one. Consumer spend is a big one. That's been propping up the airlines. Some of the industrials, Alcoa reported better revenues but worse margins. How much of those revenues are due to price hikes because of either inflation explicitly or because of room for margin improvement that sort of fly under the inflation radar? I don't know exactly, but I think that we're seeing companies that are able to pass on higher costs doing better, companies that aren't, like, you know, banks missing out on net interest income. If people are just sitting in cash because yields are so high and credit conditions are sort of worsening and the consumer's getting a little bit weaker and not able to borrow as much, you know, some of that points to broader weakness, but I think there's still room to beat if you're the right company. But we'll see what the trends look like.
Yeah. Okay. So let's move on to number three in our big three. Bitcoin. We talked a lot about Bitcoin. It's had a big run, rose to new highs. Is the party over for Bitcoin? It's pulled back some. It topped out at about 75,000 end of March, no surprise there, along with the market. It's now down to about 63, mid 63s, up a bit today. Is the party over for Bitcoin, or is this just a temporary pullback along with the market? You know, I've maintained my stance in thinking that Bitcoin was going to rise to new highs. I think I had two defended takes, both of which were right, that A, it would, Bitcoin would top, I can't remember what the number was, like maybe 40,000 back when it was, it was in the, it was down in the 20,000 range as recently as last October. I think I said it would get to 40,000 before oil prices got to above $100 a barrel. Well, I was right there. And then I said that it would get to new all-time highs. And it did that, 73,000 last month. Now back to 63,000. It was all part of my belief that the market was going to go on a run, which it did. And now that's pulled back, it's no surprise that Bitcoin is pulling back, because Bitcoin's only, I think, only utility is as a bull market play. I don't think the bull market is over. So I don't think Bitcoin is done. I don't think it's going to crater the way it did when we had a bear market in 2022 and early 2023. What do you think?
Yeah, I think ultimately the answer to that question sort of is something we've been talking about all episode, which is, all right, is the pullback done? Are we going to just resume the bull trend, or is this, are we seeing signals that this is something that might be worse, might turn into an actual correct, like a full 10% correction? And then from there, it's like, okay, well, is the correction over? Does it turn into a bear market? I'm leaning towards the bounce back, and maybe we resume the uptrend. And in that case, then yeah, Bitcoin will pick back up. It's trading over 63,000 again.
Yep.
But if the rebound from what we've been doing for the last 3 weeks sort of falls apart, then yeah, I think it's closer to over for Bitcoin. The big thing that I took away from its performance in the last couple of weeks has been when Iran had sent drones and ballistic missiles to Israel. One of the pitches for Bitcoin as an asset class is digital gold, super safe money, right? It's not fiat currency, so it can't be devalued. Well, when we saw spikes in global conflict, Bitcoin sold off 10%. So on that night, it dropped 10% overnight and has bounced back some. That certainly is a nail in the Bitcoin is ultra safe money coffin. I mean, it's sort of it's gold cosplay, right? Where it's like, oh, it's as good as gold as long as everything is great and your only concern is that we're printing too much money and devaluing the dollar. But when the S hits the fan, then that sort of cosplay falls apart. So I mean, if we check in a month and Bitcoin's at 4,000 and the S&P's at 4,800, I'm not going to be stunned. If we check in a month and Bitcoin's back over 70,000 and the S&P's at 5,350, I'm also not going to be stunned. I know that doesn't necessarily help
yeah,
people.
Yeah, I don't think it's going direction to 4,000 or even 40.
I'm sorry. I thought I said 40.
Okay.
That was my intent, was to say if the S&P drops to 4,800 and Bitcoin toys with 50,000, then I wouldn't be stunned with that.
Yeah.
It's we're in a period of uncertainty. Earnings season is going to help us sort of muddle through it and figure out some directionality on the market, which I think will ultimately be the driver for Bitcoin. If we
would
go,
you be a buyer of Bitcoin?
No.
Now?
No.
Okay.
No.
And is there a level you want it to drop to before you would? Would you just wait for the market to start showing signs of life? Or
the last time I wrote anything saying buy Bitcoin, it was when it was 15,000. Mm-hmm. And that was sort of premised on, if you're bullish on Bitcoin, this is about where it bottoms and this is where it starts running up. At these prices, no. If I could maybe turn it into a 2x, but I could lose 70% of my investment, not overnight, but over the course of a couple of months, that the risk reward isn't there for me. If Bitcoin gets back to 15,000, yeah, I'll maybe buy some.
Yeah. I mean, I've maintained, and I think you agree, that it's Bitcoin is more of a trade than a long term, especially now. Like, yeah, maybe it's different if you got it. If it did effort dip back to 15,000, 20,000, maybe it can be more of a long term play then, because there's always a bull market somewhere. But
yeah,
not right now.
So that reminds me, we talked in the pre-pod meeting a little bit about MicroStrategy, which is Michael Saylor's company. I do want to bring that up because I think that's maybe illustrative of what we're talking about. So MicroStrategy is ostensibly a software company, but really it's just a Bitcoin holding vehicle that's trading at a huge premium to Bitcoin, to its Bitcoin holdings, which does not make any sense to me. They don't have any tactical advantage with Bitcoin that would support any kind of overvaluation. What they've been doing is they've been issuing debt at really low interest rates, that's convertible debt, to then in the MicroStrategy portfolio buy Bitcoin, which then juices the share price because Bitcoin's going up and they own more of it. Well, while they've been doing that, so far this year, Michael Saylor of MicroStrategy has sold $250 million worth of shares. He has said in interviews that he is buying Bitcoin in his own personal accounts with those proceeds. I don't know if that's true. Could be. Mm-hmm. But it's something that if you're a really convicted investor and you believe it's the future and you think that your company is worth that overvaluation and that Bitcoin is worth it, why sell the shares? Why not exercise and hold them? None of it really supports the thesis that the people that are shilling Bitcoin really, really believe in it. There are retail investors that really, really believe in it, but I don't believe that the big institutional holders are huge believers in Bitcoin. The thesis doesn't really hold up if you really put it under a microscope at all, right? We've talked about it. You can't send the money easily. It costs a lot of money. They can't do a lot of transactions. You need functioning internet to cash it out. In periods of inflation, it didn't really outperform. It's really just a bull market play. I don't know what it would take to really make me a bull on it other than it being cheap.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, it's I think it'll bounce back along with the market in the next few, but whether that's weeks or months away, who knows? But eventually the next time the market truly craters, Bitcoin will fall off a cliff again. And
that's it's a game of musical chairs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You're buying Bitcoin because you can sell it to somebody else for more than you bought it for. And then if and when the music stops, everybody runs for the exits.
Right.
So the downside risk is so high with it. I mean, sure, like you can find some short term if you're a trend based trader or if you're a momentum trader or a swing trader. Yeah, there's plays with it, definitely, especially now that there are ETFs. But the retail's running for Bitcoin, the institutions are coming for Bitcoin. Yeah, but they're not buying it for themselves. They're buying it to sell to you.
Yeah. Well, Bitcoin, in the year since we've had this podcast, has had quite a run. It's more than doubled. We need to devote another 30 seconds at least to, you know, this being our 1 year anniversary, even though we just found out in real time on this podcast. We might even need to bring in Madison Robertson, our producer. I know you're partly on child duty right now, so we won't keep you. Madison, how has this year been for you? How long has this year felt for you?
I can't even believe it's been a year. It feels like we've only done a couple episodes together.
That's the right answer.
Well, that's because she's not listening to them.
That's true. Yeah, when you're not.
I told
you. She's listening enough to you know, she had her mic ready.
I take notes. My notes page is very long right now. And I told that I'll share them with my husband over dinner later. That's our typical post-podcast routine. And
you need something to help start your solo stove or your fireplace. Those notes are probably come in handy then. So Madison, what's your favorite highlight from the past year? I'm guessing you putting in extra. What was we had mild, medium, and hot for the when we did the hot sauce challenge? We put in extra hot. You put that in several times, and we.
I did.
Yeah.
I think like messing with you guys has probably been my favorite.
Yeah.
Just getting all this quality time that we've gotten together has been my favorite. I've also started this little video on the side, because obviously I edit the videos after we get off. So I take clips of where you guys are just staring at the camera really awkwardly, and I've like started to piece them together. So I'm really excited for that video. I just, anywhere I can mess with you guys, that's my favorite part. And all the stocks.
And all the stocks.
I love stocks.
Yep.
Yeah, it's not the quality of the information, it's the friends we made along the way.
There you go.
Brad. Wow. Get the tissue, somebody.
And on that note, I should mention that I won't be here next week. Speaking of friends we made along the way, we're going to have an old friend from the podcast, Larry Chung, who is a Chinese stock expert who we had on, I think Madison was on her maternity leave last
October.
Well, yeah, maybe October. Chinese stocks are starting to show signs of life. But partly Larry's just really good on all things, not just the Chinese market, but the US market. He'll be filling my chair, so to speak, remotely next week with Brad, and you guys will chop it up on all things market, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, so yeah, that'll be back at our regular time next Friday. Not, this is a podcast, you can get them whenever, so it doesn't really matter. This is not a radio show. I don't know why I treat it like that sometimes.
Schedule is important for listeners. People like to know that they're going to fall asleep as I drone on about the Fed once a week at the same time or roughly the same time.
I bet you and Larry can make next week Fed free. There's a lot to talk about with China.
That's up to J-Pal. That's not up to me.
True. Yeah. Thanks again, as always, for joining us. Thanks for joining us this past year. Let's hope the year two is even better than year one here at Street Check. As always, if you have any questions, comments, email us at streetcheck@cabotwealth.com. Like and subscribe, whether watching on YouTube or listening to Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. It helps us if you do that. Thanks for joining, and we'll see you again next week.